Bank of America admits mistakes.
And the Fed is investigating Foreclosuregate.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Hello from American Public Media in Los Angeles. I'm Steve Chiotakis.
And I'm Jeremy Hobson. You're listening to the Midday Update from Marketplace.org. It's Monday, October 25th.
Well, coming up, G20 finance ministers take steps to avoid a global currency war. And we found a job in an industry that's actually growing.
But first, Bank of America is resuming foreclosures in almost two dozen states this week. At the same time, the bank is admitting that it found some mistakes in its foreclosure paperwork. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer is covering this story for us this morning, and she joins us now from Washington. Good morning.
Good morning, Jeremy.
Well, first of all, what kind of errors is Bank of America admitting to?
Well, B of A says it's found misspelled names, incorrect data, things like a lack of signatures and files that are missing. A number was missing on an address. Jeremy, you remember the banks stopped, this bank stopped foreclosures nationwide
right.
after discovering problems with paperwork. Well, now it says it's resuming foreclosures in 23 states. And the bank says these problems are correctable. Guy Sakala publishes Inside Mortgage Finance, and he told me the bank, he believes the bank when it says no foreclosures were done in error.
You know, the average person is more than a year and a half in default on a mortgage, and when it comes down to what a mortgage contract is, agreeing to pay your mortgage. So in 99 out of 100 cases, the mortgage servicer has the right to foreclose on you.
Now, Nancy, Bank of America is the nation's largest administrator of mortgages, but it's not the only one that's had problems with paperwork. Other banks have admitted mistakes, or at least have made mistakes, many say. What are the other banks doing on this issue?
Jeremy, they're all watching to see what Bank of America will do. And they all seem to be saying these mistakes will be corrected. They say they have the right to foreclose because people did not pay their mortgages, and the foreclosures will proceed.
All right. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer in Washington. Thanks.
You're welcome.
Meanwhile, Fed Chairman Ben Bernanke said today that the Fed is investigating whether banks cut corners on foreclosure documentation. For more on that, we're joined now by Greg McBride, an analyst at Bankrate.com. Good morning.
Good morning, Jeremy.
Well, Bank of America, we hear, is resuming foreclosures this week, even though they've now admitted to problems in some paperwork. And also this morning, we hear from Fed Chairman Ben Bernanke that the Fed is going to look into whether lenders cut corners on some mortgage documentation. What do you make of these developments?
So the Federal Reserve is the primary regulator for banks, so it's no surprise that they're going to be a little more engaged in this process. And as far as the foreclosures and restarting them, I mean, there's an inevitability to all of this. The average period of time that these homeowners have gone without making payments is a year and a half, and in some cases, 2 years. So a lot of these are properties are just going to end up in foreclosure eventually.
Okay, and Greg, we also heard from Mr. Bernanke this morning about the housing market in general. Here's what he said.
Now more than 20% of borrowers owe more than their home is worth. With housing markets still weak, high levels of mortgage distress may well persist for some time to come.
And we're just moments away from data on existing home sales. Greg McBride, where do we stand on the housing market recovery at this point?
We've got a long way to go, unfortunately, where there's a big imbalance between supply and demand. That's going to take a long period of time, several years to work through, and delaying foreclosures only prolongs that pain.
The mess continues. All right. Greg McBride of Bankrate.com, thanks so much.
Thank you, Jeremy.
All right. And for one more take on this, we turn to Hugh Johnson with Hugh Johnson Advisors. He's with us from New York this morning. Hi, Hugh.
Hi, how are you?
Doing well. What are the markets? Let's talk about housing first and what the Fed chairman is talking about this morning at the FDIC conference. What are the markets looking to hear and about the housing market, and what can the Fed do about it?
There wasn't much expectation for what Chairman Bernanke was going to say about housing this morning. He did allude to housing or refer to housing. What the Federal Reserve can do about it that we know about right now is keep long-term interest rates in general, but mortgage rates in particular at a fairly low level, and hope that at a low level that'll start to stimulate some buying of homes. Right now, as he's quite right in saying, housing is very, very anemic, and they can certainly help by keeping long rates low, and they do plan to do that.
Anemic housing market. All right, so let's talk about this report then from the NABE about the nation's economy. Why is the recovery up to now anyway been so stagnant?
Well, I think it's been stagnant because we've had a lot to work our way through. I think number one at the top of the list is firms have not been confident that we're going to have a good recovery, and as a result, they have been very, very reluctant to hire. This report is a little more upbeat than I think has been mentioned. It's starting to talk about an improvement in demand, an improvement in profits. Prospects for employment are getting a little bit better. They're not great. The economy is just limping along. But basically, the report says even though the economy is just limping along, things are starting to get a little bit better. So that should be, I think, taken as fairly good news.
We're going to wrap it up there. Hugh Johnson from Hugh Johnson Advisors in New York. Thank you, sir.
You're welcome.
It is a full-blooded war that's kept Fox out of 3 million cable homes in New York for the past week. Now the Federal Communications Commission has sent letters to Cablevision and News Corp, the commission wanting to make sure there's progress being made to resolve the fight over programming fees. Now these types of blackouts are becoming more common, and so is the practice of customers getting rid of cable TV altogether. Marketplace's Elisa Roth reports.
13% of people plan to give up their pay TV subscriptions in the next year. That's according to a new study out from Strategy Analytics, a consulting company. Study author Ben Piper says the stats are a big deal.
Well, I think it has a huge significance to pay television to companies like Comcast and Cablevision and Time Warner Cable, because I think this is really the tip of the iceberg.
He says the next generation could trade in cable boxes and download their shows onto any number of devices, just like people are giving up landlines in favor of cell phones. Jim Goss follows the media business at investment firm Barrington Research. He's not so sure people will be scrambling to cut the cord.
There's a certain water cooler element and interest in being part of a community that if you didn't see your Dancing with the Stars last night, then you don't know who got kicked off the show.
Piper, the study's author, says cable companies do need to start thinking about alternatives, like offering channels a la carte. In New York, I'm Elisa Roth for Marketplace.
You're listening to the Midday Update for Monday, October 25th. I'm Steve Chiatakis. For the latest look at the markets, check out the numbers section at our website, marketplace.org.
We're going to get a take now on the global perspective, what's happening in business and economics around the world and how it affects the United States.
Global finance ministers wrapped up their meeting in South Korea over the weekend. Treasury Secretary Timothy Geithner was there trying to get everyone to agree on a proposal to curb trade imbalances, a discussion that's likely to continue when the full G20 meets in a few weeks. Marketplace China Bureau Chief Rob Schmitz reports.
The upcoming G20 meeting was already being set as the battleground for a currency war. That didn't bode well for Geithner. He's trying to avoid putting China on the defensive. In the end, Geithner got China and the rest of the G20 to agree to maintain trade balances at sustainable levels. Many economists are saying mission accomplished.
Anything that Geithner can do to shift the rhetoric away from what's the exchange rate today, that's a good thing.
Economist Andy Rothman says maintaining balanced trade among countries will be much better for the U.S. economy than forcing China to appreciate its currency. Rothman says a currency war is nothing but a sexy headline.
If you look at the exchange rate in China, it's appreciating on an annualized 7% basis now, which is pretty much what Geithner's been looking for.
But it may not be what many in Congress are looking for. Congress could soon pass legislation to punish China for manipulating its currency. In Shanghai, I'm Rob Schmitz for Marketplace.
Iceland has a bold new international money-making plan. But after its last foray into the global marketplace when its financial system went haywire, should the world be worried? Marketplace's Stephen Beard reports.
Iceland does not intend getting into banking again, just as well. Those banks wound up owing about 10 times more than the whole Icelandic economy. No, the country now wants to turn itself into a haven for the digital age.
A haven for freedom of information, freedom of expression and speech.
Lawmaker Birgitta Jonsdottir.
What we are doing is putting together all the best laws so that one country can set the standard for how we in the future strengthen these rights.
Iceland wants people from around the world to set up their servers there and publish material online without the fear of ruinous lawsuits or censorship. Icelanders see this as a noble aim and a business opportunity.
A lot of companies will probably just want internet hosting services.
Smari McCarthy is also involved in the project.
Other organisations might have greater needs, such as actually operating offices from here as a way of protecting their employees.
He says the plan could turn Iceland into a refuge for whistleblowers and for anyone who wants to expose corporate or official abuses. But Alistair Mullis, Professor of Law at the University of East Anglia, says it'll more likely turn Iceland into a hotbed of libel and intrusiveness.
It will make it very difficult to sue people who are publishing defamatory material or material that's private when they are based in Iceland.
Another critic claims that Iceland will prove as reckless with reputations and with state secrets as it was with other people's money. But Smari McCarthy says Iceland merely wants to learn and profit from the disaster of its banking boom and bust.
This is a country that was badly burned by a strong urge by those who are in power and those who own everything to keep the general public uninformed about what they're up to.
Iceland's information haven could be up and running in a year. This is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
Peter Jackson's trilogy, Lord of the Rings, means a lot to the New Zealand economy, to the tune of as much as $1.5 billion. But now union demands have film executives threatening to make the sequel someplace else. The BBC's Rebecca Singer reports.
Where do we want The Hobbit?
Some protesters turned up as characters from Lord of the Rings. Others carried placards reading, New Zealand is Middle-earth and we love hobbits. They came to demand production of the new Hobbit films remain in their country. A statement from the film's director, Peter Jackson, was read out to the crowd.
New Zealand is where the Hobbit films should be made. Their creative DNA is here. This is where Middle-earth was born and this is where it should stay.
The protests coincide with the arrival of Warner Brothers executives who've flown to the country for talks on Tuesday to determine the fate of the films. Neither the studio nor the government are disclosing what it will take to ensure the production stays in New Zealand, but filming wherever it is set to start in February. In London, I'm the BBC's Rebecca Singer for Marketplace.
You're listening to the Midday Update for Monday, October 25th. I'm Jeremy Hobson.
And I'm Steve Chiatakis for the latest look at the markets. Go to our website, marketplace.org. There's a section there called The Numbers, and you'll see them right there on our website, marketplace.org.
Today in Chicago, the U.S. Department of Agriculture holds an annual meeting with traders who rely on the agency's crop reports. And some of those traders aren't too pleased with the accuracy of the reports they've been getting lately. Marketplace's Eve Troh reports.
In September, the USDA said we'd drown in corn this year. This month it said, oops, the harvest won't be so big.
The largest on record decrease, almost incomprehensible move from September to October, really without much cause.
Agriculture analyst Darren Newsom says the price of corn jumped after that dismal report. Now investors want more reliable numbers from the USDA, but Newsom doubts the agency can deliver.
USDA says, well, look, we were never intended to be the driving force in the market. We were there to provide an objective view.
Corn's become a hot commodity, but the market is volatile. And he says stodgy government reports are part of the problem.
We're talking about so much more money than we used to that the information has to be available right then. It can't be found faulty, or at least to this degree.
So, Newsom says, firms that track crops will start building their own tools. I'm Eve Troh for Marketplace.
The midterm elections are just a week away, and as just about every political ad on TV will remind you, a good job can be tough to find these days. All this week, we're looking at the sustainability of jobs. Some have much better outlooks than others. Today, Marketplace's Adrian Hill checks out a career that's growing almost as fast as its little clients.
Okay, everyone, stand up. It's time to exercise. Everyone say exercise.
Dan the Man Levy is helping 3- and 4-year-olds get fit.
Warm up your muscles. Come on. Who's the fastest?
Watching these awkward little kids trying to get their bodies to jump and stretch, and how adoring their parents are is really very sweet.
That was amazing. Did you see that? That was amazing.
Mom Betsy Chassey and Dad Gordy Grabelny beam as their 3-year-old son Max balances and does a flip with the help of Dan the Man. They signed Max up to help get him busy and play with other kids. Dan the Man Levy says parents bring kids to his class for all sorts of reasons.
A lot of times their kids are shy. A lot of times their kids are uncoordinated. Or they just want to give them, like I said, an experience where it's a fun exercise lifestyle.
Healthier kids also, hopefully, become healthier adults. Training Tykes to Tumble has been good for Levy. He started his business 8 years ago as a mobile gym that took fitness classes to school. About 4 years ago, he got his own space in Los Angeles.
Increasingly, parents are hiring personal trainers for their children, and the number of weight training gyms for children is expected to continue to grow.
Roger Moncarz is an economist with the Bureau of Labor Statistics. The kiddie fitness trend isn't just an upper crust concern. Some family-oriented gyms, like YMCAs, are adding fitness classes for little ones. Moncarz estimates jobs for fitness instructors that pay about $30,000 a year will jump by nearly a third over the next decade. That's a faster rate than many jobs in the expanding service sector.
It's not just the adults who are concerned and have the New Year's resolutions to get in shape. They're trying to kind of impart that wisdom and those values on the children as well.
Adults are also looking to exercise to stay healthy, minimize their health care costs, and improve their, shall we say, bottom line. Too bad getting in shape can't always be this fun.
Go find your square and jump on it!
I'm Adrienne Hill for Marketplace.
American Public Media.
Hey there, I'm Bridget, co-host of Million Bazillion, Marketplace's podcast for kids about money. I want to tell you about our email newsletter course, Million Bazillion Academy. In this new and improved course, we'll help your kids learn about crypto, credit cards, and inflation in just 6 weeks. Each lesson comes with a podcast episode, a fun cartoon, discussion questions, and an activity that lets kids apply what they're learning in the real world. You can start at any time and work at your own pace. Sign up today at marketplace.org/academy.